This lesson is because of what we studied Wednesday night. We, of course, have been studying in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, and we had got down to the last three verses of that chapter, or next to the last three verses, 14 through 16. And those verses talk about a sweet-smelling fragrance, and how Christians are to be a sweet-smelling fragrance. And so this lesson kind of builds upon that, goes back to the Old Testament and looks at incense and aromas and fragrances, and then goes all the way through to the New. But to get us started here, kind of as an introduction, I found this. The traveler to the tropics is introduced to many fruits that are new to his taste. Pawpaw, mango, mangosteen, passion fruit, and others. After the first experience, some are eagerly welcomed again. Really liked them. Others received sparingly. Others not liked at all. The Bible says that Christians are to be a kind of first fruits of His creation. We remember James chapter 1, verse 18. Some, like the mangosteen, are universally admired. Here's a sweetness that people like. Some, like the pawpaw, are taken on trial. Perhaps one may grow to like that sort of thing. For still others, though, one once is enough. For some Christians, too much. So in every contact that we have with people, we're either leaving a bitter odor or the fragrance of Christ. When we look at, and I was kind of amazed at how much the Bible talks about fragrances and aromas and incense, especially as it refers to worship. So we're going to look at fragrance or aromas as seen in the lives of God's people. We're going to go back to the early days. Exodus chapter 30. We're going to look at the altar of incense. The altar of incense, beginning in verse 1 of Exodus chapter 30. These, of course, are the instructions that Moses is given by God about the altar, how it's to be built, its size, materials. You shall make an altar to burn incense on. You shall make it of acacia wood. A cubit shall be its length and a cubit its width. It shall be square and 2 cubits shall be its height. Its horn shall be of one piece with it, and you shall overlay its top, its sides all around, and its horns with pure gold. And you shall make for it a molding of gold all around. 2 gold rings you shall make for it, under the molding on both its sides. You shall place them on its 2 sides, and they will be holders for the poles with which to bear it. You shall make the poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with gold. And you shall put it before the veil that's before the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat that's over the testimony, where I will meet with you. And there it says the size of it, what it's to be made of. It's to be covered with gold. And of course, it's to set right in front of the veil before you go into the most holy place. The purpose, verse 7, Aaron shall burn on it sweet incense every morning. When he tends the lamps, he shall burn incense on it. And when Aaron lights the lamps, at twilight he shall burn incense on it. A perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer strange incense on it, or a burnt offering or a grain offering, nor shall you pour a drink offering on it. It was very specific. You were to burn incense on it and absolutely nothing else. And also, not just any incense. In other words, it wasn't just an incense that the people thought would smell good or that was convenient. It's a specific incense. Let's go down to verse 34 of the same chapter. And the Lord said to Moses, take sweet spices, stacte, and I don't know how the next one's pronounced, onycha or onyka, and galbanum, and pure frankincense with these sweet spices. There should be equal amounts of each. You shall make of these an incense, a compound according to the art of the perfumer, salted, pure, and holy. And you shall beat some of it very fine, and put some of it before the testimony in the tabernacle of meeting, where I will meet with you. It shall be most holy to you. But as for the incense which you shall not make any for yourselves, according to its composition. It shall be to you holy for the Lord. Whoever makes any like it, to smell it, he shall be cut off from his people. They could make all kinds of incenses, But this one, they could not make for themselves. It had one and only one use, and that was for the altar of incense, for the high priest, Aaron in this case, to burn on it. And it was to be a perpetual aroma to the Lord. Had four ingredients. That first one, stacte, is a powder taken from hardened drops of myrrh. This was a very rare and a very valuable plant. Myrrh coming from the balsam tree. The next one, this onycha or onica or whatever, is made from mollusk shells. Mollusk, the sea creature. Galbanum is a rubbery resin from the roots of flowering plant in Persia. And then, of course, frankincense is from the boswellia tree in southern Arabia. And people still use that, of course, today for various uses. So those were the four ingredients, all in the same amount. And they were, that was the only composition they could use. No substitutes, nothing else, just those four things. And so when the priest would minister there at the altar of incense, very naturally, because it was burning all the time, then he would pick up some of the scent on his clothes. That'd just be the most natural thing in the world. He didn't do it on purpose. You know, you just were by it, and you would very naturally have some of that on your clothes. And so as the priest, you know, would leave and then come, leave there and go to the people would do what? They would smell this and know that he had been to the holy place. See, it had a special significance. This particular fragrance, this particular odor or aroma, had a very special place. So the people knew when they smelled this odor what it meant. And I want you to think about that as we talk about later about Christians and their fragrance and their aroma and how it's supposed to be very special. Very, very special. A lot of times, especially in the Old Testament, when we look at aromas and fragrances, a lot of times it represents the prayers of God's people. In Psalm 141, the psalmist uses this figure to refer to prayers of God's people. Psalms 141, the first two verses, this is considered to be one of David's psalms. He says, beginning in verse 1, Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. Let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Now, how would that be a sweet-smelling incense to God? Well, it would only be if David was sincere, if he was leading a faithful life, a pure life. So just like that aroma that the high priest was to burn had to be special, had to be the right kind, right composition, right amount, then it was a sweet-smelling aroma. And so David is praying that his life, basically, he's offering it up in his prayer, would be acceptable, that it would be sweet-smelling in God's sight. And that's exactly how our lives are to be today. We're to be a sweet-smelling fragrance. That's carried over into the New Testament. In Revelation chapter 5, John, in his revelation there, talks about a fragrance, an aroma, an incense. In Revelation chapter 5, verse 8, John writes, Now when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. There's that incense, there's the aroma, the fragrance, and in this case it's what? The prayers of the saints. Notice chapter 8. This figure, this picture is carried over. Chapter 8, verses 3 and 4. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, with the prayers of the saints, ascended before God from the angel's hand. And I want to point out how similar this picture is here in Revelation to what went on back during the time of the law Moses was in effect with that incense. Whereas this is a spiritual one, the one back in the law of Moses was a physical one, but very similar images come to mind. And I don't think that's by accident. Certain offerings in the Old Testament were considered a pleasing aroma. I again was rather amazed at the number of times in the Old Testament that different offerings, when they're offered the right way, with the right animal, the right grain, or whatever, when it was burned, the aroma was considered to be pleasing to God. In Exodus chapter 29, we're given this description in verse 25 of Exodus 29. Moses writes, "You shall receive them back from their hands and burn them on the altar as a burnt offering, as a sweet aroma before the Lord. It is an offering made by fire to the Lord." And that's talking about a particular type of offering. And when they got it, it was burned on the altar as a burnt offering, and it became a sweet aroma. Now, if the people didn't offer what they were supposed to offer in the right way, it wouldn't have been a sweet-smelling aroma. Wouldn't have been pleasing to him. Verse 41 of the same chapter. "And the other lamb you shall offer at twilight, and you shall offer it with the grain offering and the drink offering, as in the morning, for a sweet aroma, an offering made by fire to the Lord." These go on and on and on throughout the Old Testament. Leviticus, there is a number of places where various offerings are said to be a sweet aroma or a pleasant. In some places it's a pleasant or a pleasing aroma. But when the people followed what God told them to do, burnt what they were supposed to burn, the parts they were supposed to burn and how they were supposed to burn it, it was considered a pleasing or pleasant or sweet aroma to the Lord. A sweet smelling fragrance. The Old Testament, during the time the law of Moses was in effect, had lots to do with incense and aromas and fragrances that would come up from all different types of offerings besides the altar of incense. Well, when we come to the New Testament, we see kind of a different emphasis. We still see, as we read in Revelation, the idea of fragrances and aromas and these being sweet and pleasant and acceptable to God. But now we see something that comes with it. We see that the people who are giving these aromas and fragrances are to be living in a very special, distinct way. Now, going back all the way to the altar of incense, that was a very special, unique blend. Different than all others. Well, when we look at the New Testament, Christians are to be distinct and different than all the other aromas in the world. None other should be like Christians. Now, we know in the New Testament, we've read stories about Mary, of course, bringing her special offering to God, offering to Jesus, where she pours it on His feet. In John chapter 12, we read about that particular occasion. John chapter 12, beginning in verse 3. Listen to these words and see how similar they are to some of the things we read in the Old Testament. John chapter 12, beginning in verse 3. "Then Mary took a pound, a very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped His feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. But one of His disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray Him, said, 'Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?' This He said, not that He cared for the poor, but because He was a thief and had the money box, and He used to take what was put in it. But Jesus said, 'Let her alone. She's kept this for the day of my burial. For the poor you have with you always, but me you do not have always. This was going to be a special aroma. And she's remembered for this because of what she did. This was a very, very expensive, very costly act of devotion. This was an act of worship that Mary did to Jesus. So this fragrance, this aroma, was very pleasing to God because of the reason she did it. Because of the reason she did it. And of course, over time, this served as a memorial. To what? To show how selfless she was. This was very, very expensive. 300 denarii would probably be about a year's salary for a lot of people. So today, if someone made $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year, then that would represent what Mary was giving, was pouring on Jesus this one time. So you see how costly this was for her. And for nearly 2,000 years, it's been left as a memorial for what she did. Going down to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. This, of course, is what we've been studying on Wednesday night. I want us to begin there in verse 14. As I had mentioned on Wednesday night, this is the beginning. Verse 12 is the beginning of a section in this letter where Paul is stressing the kind of lives people are to live and that it comes from the inside. They have to be sincere. They have to be true and honest and pure and godly. And so this whole section, all the way to beginning of chapter 6, is about being a sincere, a real Christian, so that the aroma is one that pleases God. Notice verse 14. Now thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph in Christ, and through us diffuses the fragrance of his knowledge in every place. For we are to God the fragrance of Christ among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. To the one were the aroma of death leading to death, and the other aroma of life leading to life. And who is sufficient for these things? And we mentioned Wednesday about the people in the first century would have been very familiar with this scene. You know, we have the victorious general leading the, if you want to call it a parade. And it was to honor him, to honor his victory over his enemies. He had won a great battle. And, of course, he would be, you know, riding probably in some type of chariot or whatever and leading this, leading the soldiers. And, of course, the captives that he had captured in battle would be behind him. The priests would be carrying incense that would be burning as they moved through. And so this aroma would be going to all the people that were there at the parade, as well as, of course, the soldiers and those who had been captured. And that aroma signified different things to different people. Of course, to the soldiers, it represented life and victory. To the captives, it would represent death. And so the people in the first century had this picture in their mind when Paul wrote to the church there at Corinth. And of course, it has significance for us because Jesus won the victory over his enemy. And of course, the enemy being Satan and being death. And so the faithful are the ones that march with him. And so we have the idea that these, which are, we're talking about us, as we're following him in victory, what happens? We're to be spreading this fragrance, this aroma. And it's sweet-smelling to God if, here's the big part, if, number one, we're leading the right kind of life. In other words, we're leading a faithful, godly, holy life. And number two, we're spreading that knowledge of Him to those around us in any way we can. So it's a two-part aroma. There's two parts that make it up, both of which are extremely important. So wherever we go, just like the incense, wherever we go, we're to be spreading that aroma, that fragrance. And again, we do it by a godly life, but also we do it by spreading the knowledge of Christ. Now, keeping that in mind, think about what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 12 in the first verse. Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. He says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. There we have the picture of a Christian being what? Living, being a living sacrifice. See, we already, with a living sacrifice, we've got the idea of aroma, just like in the Old Testament. An aroma, a sweet-smelling fragrance. We're to be holy, and if so, that's how it's going to be acceptable to God. He says, this is your reasonable service. This is the type of service that God desires of you. Our bodies are to be a living sacrifice. We're to be spreading this aroma, just like the sacrifices when they were offered would do that. Spread it wherever we go. In Hebrews chapter 13, we also see this when the writer, the very end of that letter, says in verses 15 and 16, this. He says, therefore, by Him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to His name. But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. So there we see the part of the aroma, the fragrance being what? Doing good and sharing. Being generous. Being helpful. Sharing with others. Doing good deeds. That's part of spreading the aroma of Christ. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 18, when Paul wrote to the church at Philippi, talked to them about the importance of spreading the right kind of fragrance. In verse 18 of the fourth chapter, he writes this, indeed, I have all in abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the thing sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. See, Epaphroditus came back and gave Paul what? Good news about what the Philippian Christians were doing, the kind of lives they were living. They were being faithful, and they were being devoted, and they were being generous, and they were being, they were sharing, and they were telling others the gospel. They were spreading the gospel wherever they went. So all of these things were what the Philippians were doing, and Epaphroditus tells Paul that. And Paul says, that's a sweet-smelling aroma. That's an acceptable sacrifice. So those Christians at Philippi were leaving that. They were diffusing the knowledge of Christ everywhere they went. But why does he say it's that same smell, that same fragrance, that same aroma, for some people leads to death, for other people leads to life? Because for some people, when they see Christians leading a godly life, a pure life, a holy life, they mock, they ridicule, they say, you're wasting your time, there is no God, there is no afterlife, there's whatever. So for them, seeing Christians leading a godly life, that's just making, it's just setting them on that course for destruction. It doesn't help them. Why? Because they're deciding not to live that kind of life. And so when we when we spread his knowledge. Yeah, Jesus is the Son of God. He rose from the dead. Again, mockery, ridicule. There was no Jesus. He wasn't the Son of God. He certainly didn't rise from the dead. He certainly didn't perform miracles and on and on and on. So for those people who choose not to believe, that fragrance and aroma, that knowledge, leads them to death. But the people accept that, that knowledge leads to life. Same incense, same aroma, same fragrance. For some, leads them to life. Some, leads them to death. But that's not what makes it sweet smelling. The sweet smelling has nothing to do with what people, whether they accept or reject it. The sweet smelling comes because the Christian is doing exactly what God wants them to do. They're being faithful. They're leading a godly life. They are taking opportunities to tell others about Christ. That's what makes it sweet smelling. Not how many people accept it. Doesn't have anything to do with that. Just how the Christian is living. Kind of the flip side of that is if the Christian is not spreading the right kind of aroma, it means something's rotten in his life. There's something wrong with the smell. And the world can smell one thing better than it can smell anything, and that is the world can smell hypocrisy. I mean, the world can smell hypocrisy easier than any smell. And if they know, you know, John Doe, who claims to be a Christian, who claims to be religious and holy, and they know what kind of life he's actually leading, see, they can smell that hypocrisy. They can smell the insincerity. And that's why Paul, beginning with these two verses, stresses sincerity in the next three or four chapters. Because he says the world can smell hypocrisy. Smell it so easily. The Bible mentions all kinds of sweet-smelling sacrifices, as we've seen tonight. One, though, and the last one, which leads to our invitation, stands above all the rest. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul writes this, beginning in verse 1. First two verses will close our lesson. Paul writes, "Therefore be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma." Now, there's the greatest, the sweetest-smelling aroma of all, and that is Christ offering his sacrifice on Calvary. That's the greatest of all these fragrances. It stands above all the others because it's the most important event in all of human history. His offering, his sacrifice, his resurrection, that's the central event. That's the central point of all of human history. And that's what divides believers from non-believers, is how they react to his offering, his sacrifice. Those that believe and obey leads to eternal life. Those that don't believe leads to everlasting destruction. Sweet-smelling fragrance. That's the Christian's responsibility. So tonight, as we think about the words of this invitation song, if maybe your Christian life hasn't been the aroma that you want it to be and you want to start over, tonight's the night to do it. Let's stand and sing this invitation song.